And Kobe are vying for the top spot in the news this morning. It was late last night when America found out about Arnold Schwarzenegger's desire to run for governor of California. The 56-year-old Terminator star stunned everyone last night, announcing his intentions to run during a taping of NBC's The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
The man that is failing the people more than anyone is Gray Davis. Mm-hmm. Okay. He's failing them terribly. And this is why he needs to be recalled. Mm-hmm. And this is why I'm going to run for governor of the state of California.
Schwarzenegger is widely seen as having the name recognition and personal wealth to mount a successful campaign against Governor Gray Davis. Basketball star Kobe Bryant received a warm welcome as he entered the courthouse for his advisement hearing yesterday on a sexual assault charge, Bruce Morton reports.
Most of the estimated 150 people outside the Eagle County, Colorado Justice Center were Kobe fans. Some were supporters, some were thrill seekers. This guy, Dustin O'Brien of Castle Rock, Colorado, sporting a Bryant jersey, was a little bit of both.
We're supporting his basketball career. His personal life is his own, but, you know, it's cool to see a celebrity like this come to town, you know, where you can go and actually just see him. It's unfortunate for these issues, but you still get to see him, and that's basically it.
The few people on hand who were not in Bryant's corner were mostly middle-aged and elderly people who didn't care for his admission of committing adultery with the case's alleged victim. Bruce Morton, Eagle County, Colorado.
A new study shows the most common form of hormone replacement therapy can increase the risk of heart disease for women by 80%. We'll be back with more right after this.
You know, MTV changed the way people look at television. Well, I helped change the way they look at MTV. I'm Lauren Lazen, Vice President of MTV News and Specials. I'm responsible for those documentaries on racism and drugs, sexual abuse and AIDS. You know, the ones that make some people uncomfortable, but make everybody think. I'm not uncomfortable speaking up for my ideas. Never have been. Even in school, where it wasn't always cool for a girl to be smart, my parents expected great things from me, so I did too. If you have a daughter, encourage her to stand up and be heard in school. Let her know it's cool to be smart, even in front of boys. Tell her to go for it, and then let her. Expect the best from a girl. That's what you'll get.
Help your daughter speak up for her ideas in school. Call 1-800-WCC-4GIRLS. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the Women's College Coalition.
Canadian pharmacies that buy Pfizer drugs and sell them to U.S. customers at a discounted rate run the risk of getting their supplies cut. Pfizer Incorporated announced it'll refuse to supply such drugs to pharmacies that do sell. The world's biggest drug maker told pharmacists it would sell Pfizer and Pharmacia drugs to them directly rather than through wholesalers and distributors. That would allow Pfizer to more efficiently track where the drugs are sold and cut off pharmacies that sell drugs back to the U.S. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, folks. Jesse Ventura here again to tell you about InPhone. I hate asking people for directions. It's embarrassing. So instead, I call InPhone. And the nice operator at InPhone gives me driving directions, phone numbers, movie times, or restaurant reservations. So cling to your independence like I do. Call InPhone at 888-411-1111 and tell them Jesse sent you. Call now. InPhone. How can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
While the media attention was focused on Arnold Schwarzenegger's run for governor of California, another well-known actor was quietly filing paperwork in Alameda County to also make a bid for the office. Gary Coleman, the former star of Different Strokes, has thrown his tiny hat in the ring for the October 7th recall election. With the advent of TiVo and commercial-skipping VCRs, sponsor-conscious network execs have been trying to come up with a way to pump product into people's homes. Now NBC has come up with a possible solution. Dress up commercial breaks so viewers will want to sit through them. E! Online reports the network is producing a handful of mini-series that'll be sandwiched between commercials beginning this fall. The one-minute episodes will feature lots of folks and feature cliffhanging endings. That way viewers will have to stay tuned during the breaks to find out how the night's mini-show ends. NBC says it'll put the plan into effect this fall. This is IE America, Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Carfunic Minute. What could the Lost in Space robot and Star Wars R2-D2 have in common with a phenomenon called dieseling? Will Robinson and Luke Skywalker know, and when I come back, I'll tell you.
Asphalt, rubber, metal, speed. This is racing for Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Matt Kenseth, and John Andretti. There's one more key to racing, Champion Spark Plugs. They race different makes of cars, Chevy, Pontiac, Dodge, Ford. But they all trust Champion because they all have the same destination, the winner's circle. Champion powers all.
Be sure to ask your service technician or auto parts retailer for Champion Spark Plugs.
Just like Will and Luke have some far-fetched friends to warn them of impending danger, your car has ways to warn you of the impending danger of neglected maintenance. One tune-up red flag is dieseling. Known as after-run, dieseling occurs when an engine chugs on after the ignition is turned off. Causes? Inferior gas, excessive idle speed, and carbon in the combustion chamber. Dieseling is just one warning that, if neglected, may leave you lost in space. The space alongside the road. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting from deep in outer space on the Sirius radio satellite network to automobiles all over America and trucks. And now Sirius has a home receiver and broadcasting live on the internet at radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, and other venues with archives at whiterosesociety.org. Boy, we have interesting stuff here. Al Gore just wrapped up moments ago his speech at moveon.org. And we didn't have time to get an audio clip here, but I do have a transcript of the thing. And thanks to, I don't remember who it was in our chat room who said, hey, did you notice this? I mean, he brought it to my attention. By the way, if you want to get to the chat room and join in a lively and intelligent conversation, for those of you who have a computer nearby, the way to get into the chat room is to go to TomHartmanShow.com. Or ProgressiveTalkRadio.com will take you there also, as will LiberalTalkRadio.com. And click on the link to Chat Room. And that will take you to the International Trade Forum on CompuServe, where you just push the chat button and boom, you're in. And, of course, if you'd like to be on the program today, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 is the number. The question for our first hour, why did we really go to war with Iraq? And what does this mean for the future of U.S. democracy? See, this is a question that even Al Gore didn't, well, he sort of took it on in this speech. He touched on it. He danced around the edges of it. Basically, he talks at some length about how this administration is basically a kleptocracy. He quotes George Akerlof, the 2001 Nobel Prize winner for economics, who said, and I'm quoting George Bush, quoting Akerlof, quote, the Bush administration is the worst government the U.S. has ever had, and it's more than 200 years of history. This is not normal government policy. What we have here is a form of looting. Gore says, I remember all that last month when everybody was looking for who ought to be held responsible for the false statements in the president's State of the Union address. He's talking about the president's lies about why we went into Iraq. He starts out, he goes through this list. Oh, we went in because of weapons of mass destruction. We went in because Saddam was working with Osama bin Laden. We went in because he was going to give poison gas to our enemies. We went in because he was building nuclear bombs. If we go in, we'll be open with welcome arms. And even though the rest of the world was mostly opposed to the war, they'd fall into line quickly as soon as they saw how great it was what we did. Okay. And then he says, now, of course, everybody knows that every single one of those impressions was just dead wrong. Saddam had nothing whatsoever to do with the attacks of September 11, Al Gore says. In fact, the U.S. pulled significant intelligence resources out of Pakistan and Afghanistan, where they were searching for Osama, in order to get ready for the rushed invasion of Iraq. And that disrupted the search for Osama at a critical time. This isn't just political ranting, folks. This is real. I mean, this is the direction. This guy has taken our country in such a series of dangerous directions. And fortunately, there's still something we can do about it. It's called the electoral process, and it's going to happen a year and a half from now, November 2004. John Kennedy, by the way, our quote for the day, I am certain. You know, I can't do Kennedy's way. I am certain that after the dust of centuries has passed from our cities, we too will be remembered not for victories or defeats in battle or politics, but for our contribution to the human spirit. John F. Kennedy. Anyhow, Al Gore goes on. He says, well, the cheering crowds didn't show up. The nuclear weapons information was forged. There were no germs. We actually had, Gore doesn't mention this in his speech, but I've got this in another thing here I was going to share with you. We actually, those A-team guys that we pulled out of Pakistan and Afghanistan who were hunting for Osama bin Laden, there's about 800 of these guys who are like, you know, special operations. I mean, literally the basis of the old A-team movie. I mean, not only they're not, you know, falling all over each other like in the TV show, but this was the real. These were the guys, the special operations guys. We actually infiltrated them into Iraq before we invaded Iraq. They were in there for several weeks, and they were on the ground. They knew what was going on. They were calling in positions to the aircraft. We knew. There was a report issued in 1998 after Bill Clinton bombed the last WMD facilities that Saddam had. Within the United States government, within the Department of Defense, a report that said, as far as we can tell, we've got it all. And he doesn't have the ability to reconstitute it because our sanctions were preventing him from buying things from other people. He couldn't get the raw materials to make this stuff. Anyhow, so Al Gore goes through this stuff. And he says that in order to have a functioning democracy, he says you must have a shared respect for the rule of reason as the best way to establish the truth. Then he goes on to say the Bush administration routinely shows disrespect for that whole basic process. Here's the pattern that I see, Al Gore says. The president's mishandling of and selective use of the best evidence available on the threat posed by Iraq is pretty much the same as the way he intentionally distorted the best available evidence on climate change. You remember the EPA study where they stripped out the climate change parts on the orders of the administration, dancing to the tune of their oil company donors? Back to Al Gore. And rejected the best available evidence on the threat posed to America's economy by his tax and budget proposals? You'll recall George Bush said his tax cuts for the rich would stimulate the economy. Well, his first one in 2000 didn't, or 2001 didn't. His second one in 2002 didn't. His third one in 2003 isn't. In each case, Gore says, the president seems to have been pursuing policies chosen in advance of the facts. Policies designed to benefit friends and supporters, and has used tactics that deprive the American people of any opportunity to effectively subject his arguments to the kind of informed scrutiny that is essential to our system of checks and balances. This is a great speech. Further, he says, President ought to rein in John Ashcroft and stop the gross abuses of civil rights that twice have been documented by his own inspector general. The administration hastened from the beginning to persuade us that defending Americans against terror cannot be done without seriously abridging the protections of the Constitution for American citizens, up to and including an asserted right to place them in a form of limbo totally beyond the authority of our courts. And that view, Al Gore said this morning, is both wrong and fundamentally un-American. He wraps up, he says, hear me well, not as a candidate for any office, but as an American citizen who loves my country. He did not declare his candidacy. In fact, he declared his anti-candidacy. But he sure has helped kick off the 2001 election cycle. 2004 election cycle, excuse me. This is going to be interesting times. Interesting times. Okay, back in 1948, George Kennan got right to the heart of the issue here. The issue being, why did we really go to war with Iraq? And what does this mean for the future of American democracy? Why do you think we really went to... You know, this is just completely absent from the public discourse. When was the last time you heard some commentator on one of these programs where they have a right-winger and somebody from Time magazine to balance them out say... You know, I mean, they'll talk about, well, yeah, he lied about that uranium, and, well, it seems to me that when they were talking about those weapons of mass destruction, they must have been just kind of hallucinating 1998. Well, we knew he had them at one time. He used them against his own people 10, 15 years ago when we were supporting him, and we provided him with those weapons, you know. There have even been folks on the right to go so far as to say that the famous and well-publicized CBS television footage of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Osama bin Laden is forged. I mean, but anyway, in all these discussions, you know, they say they're willing to go as far as, it turns out the CIA says there was no involvement with Osama bin Laden between Hussein and bin Laden. Although, you know, bin Laden's guys are getting in there now for sure. I mean, we created a place for them, but they were not welcome before. But anyhow, they will point out, yeah, that's right. You know, that justification wasn't there. That justification wasn't there. But when was the last time on one of these shows you heard somebody say, well, here's why I think we actually went in there? Have you ever, on one of these news talk commentary types of shows, heard somebody say, well, here's why I think they really went in there? Since none of the reasons that they have given us have held up, and we have since learned that they knew in advance that all of those reasons were lies. And I use a very strong word with great respect. When somebody knowingly misinforms people, that's a lie. And we have now demonstrated that they knew that many of these things were not the truth. So why did we really go to war with Iraq? And what does this mean for the future of U.S. democracy? Well, let's just back it up just a little bit. Put on the wide-angle lens here and look at the sweep of history just for a moment, because it's going to bring us right back to right now. In 1948, George Kennan published a public policy planning study for Harry Truman in which he said, and I quote, and this was not, you know, some fringe thing. This was mainstream, right to the heart of this thing. Within the United States government, the highest levels, he said, and I quote, we have about 50% of the world's wealth, but only 6.3% of its population. This disparity is particularly great as between ourselves and the peoples of Asia. In this situation, we cannot fail to be the object of envy and resentment. Our real task in the coming period is to devise a pattern of relationships which will permit us to maintain this position of disparity without positive detriment to our national security. To do so, we will have to dispense with all sentimentality and daydreaming, and our attention will have to be concentrated everywhere on our immediate national objectives. And then he gets to the kicker. Then he gets to the real kicker. And I will share that with you right after we come back from this break, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. I'm Tom Hartman. This is the IE America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished.
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kicking off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
America needs you, Harry Truman. We were listening to one of Harry Truman's advisors. What a wonderful synchronicity. Coincidence or conspiracy? Speaking of which, in our chat room, if you go to TomHartmanShow.com and click on the chat room links, you'll get in there. Interesting, you might want to vote. Should Shep GC 2003 buy the book Unequal Protection, The Theft of Corporate, The Rise of Corporate Domination and the Theft of Human Rights, or buy a bikini and a toy company? Let me just click up here a little higher and see where the URL was. KB Toys is offering a 12-inch George W. Bush action figure in a flight suit. And you can put in your comment or vote about what you would do with it. Anyhow, back to Harry Truman's advisor, George Kennan, and his public policy planning study. And here's the nut of it. Here's the hub of it. This is It wasn't the beginning. I mean, our policy went way back, but he was saying, you know, we got to stop being sentimentalists here. He said, and I quote, he started out by pointing out that we had half the world's wealth and 6.3% of its population, and this is not something the world is going to ignore. And the question that we're framing all this in, by the way, is why did we really go to war with Iraq, and what does this mean for the future of U.S. democracy? Kennan says, we need not deceive ourselves that we can afford today the luxury of altruism and world benefaction. We should cease to talk about vague and unreal objectives such as human rights, the raising of living standards, and democratization. The day is not far off when we are going to have to deal in straight power concepts. The less we are then hampered by idealistic slogans, the better. This is why in Liberia, where there's a real crisis, a real dictator, people dying, not to say Saddam wasn't a real dictator, but I mean, there's an actual war going on. People are dying every day. We sent in 7 soldiers, and only then, because of the pressure of world condemnation, essentially, for our failure to do so. But why did we go into Iraq? Well, Rupert Murdoch weighed in on this topic way back when. Not so far way back when, but about 3 weeks before we declared war on Iraq, or 3 weeks before we began hostilities. We started our bombing. And he was, you know, he was talking to reporters. And he said, I think George Bush, he said, I think he's going to go on with it about Iraq. And then he said, and get this, it's Rupert Murdoch, owner of Faux News and one of the major Republican puppet masters, said, and I quote, the greatest thing to come out of this for the world economy would be $20 a barrel oil. That's bigger than any tax cut in any country. Once Iraq is behind us, the whole world will benefit from cheaper oil, which will be a bigger stimulus than anything else. End quote. Rupert Murdoch saying to George Bush, you want to get yourself reelected, you get that oil, boy. Get it. Well, this sounds heretical. What? The United States going over to Iraq to get oil? Yeah, according to the CIA, the Iraq actually does have more oil than any other nation on planet Earth, including Saudi Arabia, because so much of it hasn't been officially discovered. According to Dick Cheney's policy meetings, they were dividing up the unexplored areas and figuring out which companies in what countries might want to drill them before 9/11. This is Tom Hartman, Talk Radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll carry this on in just a moment.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
The national unemployment rate for July slipped 0.2 to 6.2%, but it's not due to an improving economy. The Labor Department says the jobless rate fell because 556,000 Americans stopped looking for work. According to federal guidelines, those not actively seeking work are not counted in the unemployment figures.
No strike just yet at Verizon. Talks between the phone giant and its two unions stretched past a strike deadline yesterday and continued without resolution. Nearly 80,000 members of the Communications Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers are poised for a walkout unless talks yield an agreement that meets workers' demands on health care and job security. Verizon cut some 18,000 jobs last year, not including 2,300 New York State workers whose terminations were successfully reversed by unions, thanks to language in the previous contract that prevented their firings. The two unions are also looking for greater freedom to organize the company's largely non-union wireless and data divisions.
Sugar production is officially no longer a staple of the economy of Trinidad and Tobago. The Caribbean island chain closed its state-owned sugar company last week, laying off more than 8,000 people in the process. The workers received severance payments of about $12,000 each and will be allowed to lease land on which they can continue farming if they wish to.
It was a workhorse that powered travelers through cities and along highways over the last 70 years, but the reign of the Volkswagen Beetle finally came to an end over the weekend. After producing 21.5 million of the vehicles, Volkswagen finally pulled the plug on the last of its Beetle assembly lines in a plant outside of Mexico City. 300 workers will be reassigned to other areas, building Jettas and the more modern version of the Beetle. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Dave Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it, Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Certain, John F. Kennedy said, that after the dust of centuries has passed from our cities, we too will be remembered not for victories or defeats in battle or politics, but for our contribution to the human spirit. It rather contradicts the more cynical worldview that says, no, the business of America is business, and we go overseas to protect our vital national interests, when those vital national interests coincide with very wealthy and politically powerful and well-connected interests, people, or corporations. Why did we really go to war with Iraq? When Larry Klamath of Judicial Watch sued Dick Cheney for information about what happened in that meeting back in early 2001, when the United States government's energy policy was decided, when they decided to blow off the Kyoto Treaty to encourage SUVs, to give billions of dollars in welfare payments to oil and gas industry and coal industry companies, to do absolutely nothing about conservation or the environment. When that decision was made, Larry at Judicial Watch said, you know, I want to know who was there, what was said. Well, he still hasn't found out who was there. We do know it was all the big oil companies. Enron, Chevron, pretty certain, you know, who went and who came from the White House. And the three documents he was able to get, which you can find on his website, judicialwatch.org, show that they were discussing dividing up Iraq. They had identified about 70 or 80 oil fields that are already known, and there was a list of potential companies that might want to buy the oil in those oil wells or run production from them. And there were the 9 or 10 districts of southwestern Iraq where it is believed there's even more oil, but it's pretty inhospitable. We're talking good old-fashioned desert here. Nobody lives there. Where it hasn't been drilled, but where the industry is pretty sure that there's more oil there than in Saudi Arabia. And they divided this up and said, okay, who are we going to sell this to? People wonder, why is it that this administration does not want the United Nations involved in Iraq? It's costing us $1 billion a week. It's costing us more every few months than we spend in foreign aid to the entire planet in a year. So why not bring the UN in? Another question you're not hearing asked on faux news and other talk shows. The reason why, of course, is because then Halliburton wouldn't have the exclusive right to pump oil in Iraq. That if the UN, if other countries are asked to sacrifice their young men and women in the cause of securing one of the world's largest oil supplies, they're going to say, we would like part of the bounty if we're going to pay part of the price. And Cheney was making it quite clear, even back before 9/11, when he was planning the invasion of Iraq, as the Judicial Watch lawsuit seems to demonstrate, was making it quite clear that we'll let others in, but they're going to be buying from us. We're going to be making the money here. Back in 1889, 96% of Guatemala's export earnings came from coffee. Back in 1862, the authorities in Coban, Guatemala, complained, quote, after having bought all the land in this area, the foreigners have also taken much more. We cannot even plant a kernel of land because they have the best land. The United Fruit Company was Guatemala's largest landowner. Del Monte took over in 1972. The reason why they called these banana republics was because our companies went down there and planted banana plantations. It wasn't, hey, they're growing bananas, let's go pick a few. No, it was take the land from the peasants, grow the food, ship it up here, make a profit. And if those peasants say, hey, wait a minute, we don't like this, send the army down. 1850 to 1856, before the Civil War, U.S. soldiers were defending a railroad in Panama. 1852 to 1853, U.S. Marines landed in Argentina to protect an American company. In 1855, we sent our Marines to Uruguay to protect an American company. In 1856, William Walker, with a mercenary army, conquered Nicaragua. Cornelius Vanderbilt, now Walker had gone with mercenaries. Cornelius Vanderbilt builds his own mercenary army and goes after Walker. The first war is going on in Nicaragua, and it's between two rich Americans fighting over who gets to control the land down there that on which they can grow fruit to ship up here, because it's so profitable. 1885, the USS Massachusetts goes to Guatemala. Now the U.S. Army's involved. 10, 15 years later. In 1898, we control Cuba, the Philippines, and Puerto Rico, and we annexed Hawaii. 1905 in Honduras. 1906, we took Cuba. 1910, we took Nicaragua. 1912, the United Fruit began full-blown operations in Honduras. On and on it goes. Hawaii's a good example. And the first residents of Hawaii arrived around 1200 A.D., first folks from Polynesia. Then James Cook comes in 1795 on behalf of the East India Company, searching for food, searching for gold. But Ladd and Company of Honolulu in 1833, an American company, set up the first sugar company in Hawaii and just essentially took over the island. In 1876, there was a treaty that allowed sugar to be imported into the United States free of duty. And boom, there was a gold rush going. In fact, so many immigrant workers from Asia were taken into Hawaii to work in the sugarcane fields and the pineapple fields by American companies. They were cheap labor, that they actually came to outnumber the Hawaiians by the turn of the last century. And then in 1891, Queen—I'm not Hawaiian, so I'm sure I'll mispronounce this— one of our Hawaiian listeners, I'm sure, will correct me, announced that she was going to put forward a new constitution. U.S. Minister Dwight John Stevens said, nope, 162 fully armed troops in the USS Boston, which was in Honolulu Harbor, went in to, quote, protect American lives and property, end quote. And so on January 17th, 1893, the Queen yielded her throne. And upon abdication, Sanford B. Dole, as in Dole Pineapple, accepted the presidency of Hawaii. So this is not anything new. I mean, why is it that nobody is... It's like nobody wants to talk about this on the talk shows, on the political... Well, Bob Novak, what do you think? You know... Bob Novak, I mean, he's teetering on the edge of going to jail for outing a CIA agent. I mean, he's got his own problems, I suppose. But what? Why don't we talk about this? Here is a country that has the world's second largest proven oil reserves and is estimated to have the world's largest oil reserves. It costs as much as $12 a barrel to pump oil out of Saudi Arabia because we've pumped the wells more than a quarter dry, and so now we're having to start sucking the oil out with pumps. In Iraq, the oil bubbles out of the ground. No pumps are necessary. There are no pumps in Iraq. It bubbles out of the ground and runs down to the sea in the pipelines. And they get some small pumps, but it's nothing like in Saudi. It costs $1.50 a barrel to produce oil in Iraq. It's costing almost $20 a barrel to produce oil in most of Texas now because we have so thoroughly dried out those wells. Incredible profit. Now, what can we do? I mean, how can we improve this? And, you know, why did we really go to war with Iraq, and what does this mean for the future of American democracy? And what are these guys doing about this? We produce about 20% of our oil, about 20% of the oil that the United States consumes, the United States produces. And we have the ability to produce a lot more than that if we started converting coal to oil, and there is a technology for that, and we've got a lot of coal. Or if we started growing oil. This is being done in Europe right now. The last time I was in Germany, we stopped at a gas station and filled up our car, a diesel car, with what's called biodiesel. They have it in the gas stations. It's rapeseed oil, canola oil, or recycled French fry oil. Your car actually smells faint. You stick your nose around the tailpipe of the car and it smells faintly of French fries. So we have the ability to live within our means. I've mentioned before, Louise and I lived in Germany for a year back in the 86-87 year. And the Western Europeans, not even all of Europe, you know, which would include things like Albania, but Western Europeans, the French, the British, the Germans, the Norwegians, the Swedes, the Italians, the Spanish, Western Europe consumes on average 1/7 per person, 1/7 the energy that Americans do. And yet their standard of living is not what you would call sacrificial or painful. In fact, their standard of living is quite good. You know, in France, you're required by law to take 6 weeks of vacation every year. Most people take 8, for example. They're getting by. They're doing good. So what do we do about it? Well, Jimmy Carter tried to set this thing, and in fact, he did. He created an entire industry by simply saying, okay, let's give tax credits to families that make their homes more efficient. Let's give bigger tax credits or tax breaks, income tax breaks, to people who convert their home from oil heat to solar heat or other forms of heat and cooling. Let's give tax credits to this emerging industry. I mean, after all, we're giving $16, $18 billion a year to the oil industry in corporate welfare, more than or about the same as we're giving the entire planet in foreign aid, just to the oil industry. And, of course, they use a lot of that money to then buy our politicians. But anyhow, Jimmy Carter says, you know, let's just encourage this using the old-fashioned American way. We'll give people incentives. And it happened. It happened. People started making solar cells. People started building solar houses. People, you know, things happened. And then a bunch of people in the oil industry said, that Ronald Reagan guy, you know, he kind of did our bidding in California the way we wanted it. Maybe we can do it for the country. He's a good actor. He can play the role of president and do what we tell him. And what we're going to tell him is, we're the oil guys. We got the money. If your party wants power, you do what we say. Ronald Reagan's first official act of office was to remove Jimmy Carter's solar collectors from the roof of the White House. They never returned. Sort of like the song, right? In the streets of Boston. And what? And so what has this led to? It has led to this Larry Curley and Moe Three Stooges imitation going on in the White House and the Department of Defense. Not broadly the Department of Defense, but in Rumsfeld's offices, of trying to make the facts conform to the story that they came up with in advance. As Paul Wolfowitz said in the Vanity Fair article, that you know, they had to have a story to sell this invasion. They'd already decided to invade Iraq. We want their oil. It's that simple. George Bush Sr. said the American lifestyle is not negotiable. If we're going to give $25,000 a year tax breaks for purchasing SUVs and not for any other kind of car, and we're going to have a huge fleet of vehicles out there that get 10, 12 miles to the gallon, then we better have cheap oil. And that's what we're going to do, because that's what the captains of industry want us to do. And in England, they're going, you know, Tony Blair, the third way, he's a new Democrat. He's a new Labour, same thing, which basically means in the pockets of the corporations, not the small businesses, not the businesses that built America, not the medium-sized businesses, not the companies in Main Street USA and the small towns where small businesses still survive, not the entrepreneurial ventures and startups. They don't have the time or money to have lobbyists with their $500 Gucci shoes walking around the halls of Washington, D.C., passing out $100,000 checks to politicians. Now, we're talking about a handful, a few hundred, maybe 1,000 huge corporations that have seized control of the Republican Party, are grasping for control of the Democratic Party, as Joe Lieberman, the Democratic Leadership Council candidate, the corporate money candidate for the Democratic presidential position, said of his debates with Howard Dean and the other, and Dennis Kucinich, this is a struggle for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party. And so in England now, they've got this Operation Rockingham that they set up, just like the OSP, just like the Office of Special Plans that was put together in the Pentagon by Rumsfeld, in both cases to cook the intelligence books to justify a war with Iraq in order to get the oil. These are the lengths to which these guys are going. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Now, everything you need for successful estate planning comes in one package. The new Master Estate Kit is a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you'll get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Yes, thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really? Mm-hmm.
Fantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've done talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear my boy program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, when you do that.
The Mike Malloy.
Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Why did we really go to war with Iraq? And what does this mean for the future of U.S. democracy? You know, the question ultimately that you and I are going to have to ask ourselves, and we're going to have to answer, hopefully through an electoral process, hopefully this guy's incompetence, George Bush's incompetence, as it was before 9/11. I mean, he got a report months before 9/11 saying Al-Qaeda was going to be using hijacked airplanes and didn't even bother to let the FAA know. Hopefully this guy's incompetence is not going to lead to another terrorist attack that might coincidentally happen a few months before the elections of 2004. And alter the course of history, as they say. Hopefully there will be a normal election process in the United States, and we can look at this question. And the question is, fundamentally, are having SUVs, and of course that's not the whole issue, but about a third of our total oil usage goes into our vehicles. So it's a big part of it. Are having SUVs and using electricity the way we do, which is about another third of our oil usage. That is, you know, not replacing incandescent bulbs with fluorescent. I mean, we know how to conserve electricity. Are having SUVs and burning electricity the way we want to worth maintaining a projected military force all around the world and having our young men and women fight and die in distant lands to provide the oil to fuel that machine? That's the question we have to ask. It's the question that Jimmy Carter asked, and he said, no, it's not worth it. It's the question that George Bush Sr. asked, and he said, yes, it is worth it. This is a legitimate debate. Think about it. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Molloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Molloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Molloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Mike Molloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you
it's
hate me?
True.
You
why,
hate
why not
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Molloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Two more U.S. soldiers were killed earlier today. It happened during a small arms attack on troops with the 1st Armored Division in Baghdad. One other soldier was also wounded in the attack, and an Iraqi interpreter was injured as well. An attack taking place in the Iraqi capital's Al-Rashid district. Jordanian officials are condemning today's bomb attack on its embassy in Baghdad as a cowardly act. Jordan has recently given asylum to two of Saddam Hussein's daughters, and the country's information minister, Dr. Nabil al-Sharif, believes that was part of the motive for today's attack.
We think that this cowardly terrorist act is aimed at deviating Jordan from its path of support for Iraq, and this is not going to happen.
11 people have now been confirmed dead due to the truck bomb explosion today. More than 60 people are reported wounded. Meanwhile, hundreds of survivors and relatives and friends of those killed in the U.S. Embassy bombing in Kenya 5 years ago gather for a memorial service today. That ceremony taking place at the former site of the building, which is now marked by a black granite wall inscribed with the names of the victims. Deputy U.S. Ambassador to Kenya, William Brenchik, praised the country's efforts to continue combating terrorism.
There are recent actions, both in law enforcement and in terms of increased protection for Kenyan citizens, show the seriousness of their purpose in eradicating this menace from the country.
219 people were killed in that blast. Most of the victims were African. 12 were Americans. North Korea may now be edging closer, finally, to multilateral talks that could end the standoff concerning its apparent nuclear weapons program. A Chinese delegation arrived in North Korea earlier today to hopefully lay the groundwork for the upcoming talks that will include delegates from six nations, including the United States. No date has been formally announced for the start of the meetings yet, but there's been widespread speculation it could take place late this month or in early September. North Korea said earlier this week those discussions will take place in Beijing.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Liberian President Charles Taylor is telling CNN he will, in fact, step down Monday and hand over power to his vice president. His declaration comes as West African peacekeepers finally move into the capital of Liberia today for the first time since arriving at Monrovia's airport this week. The peacekeepers waved white flags and were greeted by thousands of cheering Liberians. The number of new jobless claims filed during the week ending August 2nd stayed below the critical 400,000 mark, and that's leading many experts to believe the economy may finally be turning around. It's the third week in a row the number of new claims has stayed below that 400,000 mark.
Hi, folks. Jesse Ventura here to talk to you about InPhone, the advanced, enhanced, totally modern directory assistance available all across this great country of ours. Just dial 888-411-1111, and the super-friendly operator will help you access phone numbers or movie times, even driving directions to the theater. So call InPhone at 888-411-1111 and tell them Governor Jesse sent you. InPhone, how can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
Iran's public prosecutor has now ordered the release of 9 students jailed during pro-democracy protests earlier this summer. The students are thought to be among several Iranians who were arrested during the protests against Iran's clerical establishment. Details from Middle East correspondent Roxana Saberi in Tehran.
Iran's official news service says the students are to be freed in accordance with an order by the country's supreme leader. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei had called on the judiciary to show leniency to jailed students. Judiciary officials have said around 4,000 protesters were arrested when they demonstrated against Iran's clerical leaders in June. They said more than half of those arrested were quickly released. But legislators have said at least 30 students are still being held in Tehran's Evin prison. A spokesman from Tehran's public prosecutor's office says the 9 students to be freed are part of a first stage of releases, the student leaders, and the son of a reformist parliamentarian. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Years ago, a small hard drive meant a traffic-y physical commute. Today, it's the curse of telecommuting. But however you get to work, I'll pave the way with some timely maintenance tips when we come back.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered a company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindtheshop.com. That's bgfindtheshop.com.
Whether you commute to work via old-fashioned blacktop or the Internet superhighway, automotive maintenance will give you more time for fun. Just remember, give me five. One, once a year, treat your vehicle to an annual inspection. Two, every 2 years, change brake fluid. Three, it's time for an oil service every 3,000 miles. Four, mark your calendar every 4 years for new radiator hoses. And five, rotate tires every 5,000 miles. Now, take five, away from your busy job to enjoy a cruise in your well-maintained vehicle. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Welcome back to our program, broadcasting coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting on the Sirius radio satellite, channel 145. Sirius left all across North America, and broadcasting live on the internet, radiopower.org, and IEAmericaRadio.com, live365.com, with archives at whiterosesociety.org. This is Tom Hartman asking the question this hour: how can we stop the bleeding of American jobs? We touched on this yesterday, the moving of manufacturing overseas. We talked a little bit about this last week, the moving of white-collar jobs overseas. We got a big problem with this. What can we do about it? The White House seems to think it's not a problem. Bush sent his top three economic officials, the Secretary of the Treasury, the Secretary of Commerce, and the Secretary of Labor, on a 5-day tour around the Midwest in a bus that they rented from a rock band with mirrored ceilings and leather chairs, to tell average Americans that everything's going to be okay. Don't worry, just hang out, give enough money to the rich people, and eventually they might create a job. Yeah, they might go over and build a factory in China. That's always possible. They might go over and build a factory in Taiwan or Korea. Yeah, I suppose that's possible. They might put it in treasury bills and make some profit on it. I suppose that's possible now that they're getting a lower tax rate on income from investments than they are on income from drawing a paycheck if they started a company and became president of it. They said, but nonetheless, hang on. We'll get there. Well, the reality is actually we probably will to some extent, because the United States economy is this huge thing. I mean, there's a lot of us, and we work really hard, and we know how to start businesses. We know how to do things in this country. There's a tremendous can-do spirit in America. There's a tremendous spirit of entrepreneurialism, an extraordinary vitality to this nation. And if you think about why, as the Declaration of Independence says, men constitute governments among the governed, why do we create government? Well, in part we do it to provide for the means of our own health, happiness, and pursuit our own health, welfare, and pursuit of happiness. And we do that in part by providing the means on which business can exist, the substrate, the surface upon which business can exist. We do that, you and me, we the people. Through our elected representatives, through our government, this is what's called democracy in a constitutionally limited republic. Yes, we live in a democracy, we vote. Yes, we live in a republic, we have a constitution. They're both right. And what we do with that is we provide a stable money system, we provide a system of courts and laws, and the means to enforce those laws. So that people can go into business with each other and know that if they're dealing with somebody unscrupulous, there's a means of recourse. And this is one of the biggest problems that a lot of entrepreneurs had when the Soviet Union collapsed. In the first year or two, I was there. I was in Kaliningrad. I spent time in Kaliningrad right after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And one of the biggest problems... I remember the first night I was in Kaliningrad, we were actually out the countryside over near the Polish border, about 30, 40 miles, maybe 50 miles from the city of Kaliningrad, but it's in the region also known as Kaliningrad. It used to be called East Prussia, Ostpreussen. And this was the week of the first elections. In fact, what's his name? Zhirinovsky. Vladimir Zhirinovsky was running. And he was on TV. I kid you not, this is absolute truth. Zhirinovsky was on TV. I sat and I watched this. He was on TV and he said, anybody who votes for me will get a turkey and a quart of vodka, or a liter of vodka. And rather than erupting in hysterical laughter, the news commentators, after he was finished with his speech... And this was a virulent nationalist speech. It was something worthy of Hitler in his early years. After he gave this speech, the commentators, these two Russian commentators on the news, this was all in Russian. I don't speak very much Russian, if in fact not more than a few words, but my German is pretty good. And I was with a family who the wife was German and the husband was Russian, and so they were translating from Russian into German and what his speech was. And these two people on TV, they start talking about, well, where's he going to get all that vodka? How's he going to fulfill that campaign promise? If he wins, how's he going to, where do we have that many turkeys in Russia to give to everybody who'd vote for him? And this was the essence of their discussion. And they were trying to come up with solutions. Well, I suppose he could probably buy them on the open market. I wonder how many turkeys they have in America. And, you know, there are other countries in Europe that do produce vodka. I just don't know if he can get a decent price for it. And where's he going to come up with the foreign exchange money? And should the government pay for this or not? And all this kind of stuff. And I'm sitting there going, whoa. I mean, you know, this... And that night, we got in a car and we drove down into Kaliningrad after sundown. And the city was black. I mean, it was just black. There were no signs anywhere. There were no streetlights anywhere. People couldn't afford electricity. The city couldn't afford electricity. So everybody turned everything off unless it was absolutely urgent. You'd see a few apartment or house lights windows lighted. And in the center of town was this park. And around the perimeter of the park were all these little stalls like you see in a traveling circus or a traveling carnival. And the stalls were the only places in town where you could buy anything. There was one that just sold tobacco. There was another one that just sold booze. There was another one that just sold knickknacks. And I went around to these places. I was looking for some Russian souvenirs that I could take back for my kids. And I couldn't find anything except vodka that wasn't made in Russia. Or that was made in Russia. The vodka was the only thing that was made in Russia. Everything else was imported. And the guys running these stalls were the mafia. It was the mob. It was the Russian mafia. And the problem that entrepreneurs had in Russia after the fall of communism was that there wasn't a good legal system and financial system that was safe, reliable, trustworthy, so that people could actually do business. And it's taken them a long, long time, and they're still not there yet. And, of course, this is a problem that Iraq is facing now. This is the problem of any country that goes through some incredible, rapid transition. And so here in the United States, we provide this, you and I, we provide this through our government so that people can operate businesses, and that one of the, and therefore the deal, the social contract that we have is that part of that deal is that if you're going to run a business in this country and use the infrastructure of this nation, you're going to use our roads to get your employees to your place of business. You're going to use the telephone systems that in most places were actually paid for with government money in the early days, the telephone poles. If you're going to use the rights of way, if you're going to use, you're going to travel your salespeople around, you're going to use our public transportation systems, you're going to use our, even our private airlines work on highways in the sky that are controlled by the federal government, the FAA. If you're going to use all this stuff to make your business work and to make a profit, if you're going to extract wealth out of our nation, in exchange for that, you must contribute something to the social welfare of this nation. At the very least, you must pay taxes. And ideally, you're going to provide jobs on the one hand for our people, and you're going to provide us with products and services that people want. Now, of course, the second is a given. If they're not providing products and services people want, they're going to go out of business. But paying taxes and providing jobs. So what's happened now since the Reagan-Bush revolution of the early 1980s? We've seen this. I mean, those of you who are old enough to remember, I mean, this is one of the real problems, I think, that we're facing, is that there are so many people who are in their teens and early 20s right now who grew up listening to right-wing hate radio and the whole right-wing agenda and thinking that it was really true what these guys were saying. Reagan cut taxes and there was prosperity. The fact of the matter is Reagan cut taxes one year and for the following 6 years raised taxes every single year. For example. That, you know, the myths, the right-wing myths, the people actually believing this stuff, that you know, what's good for the market is all that is necessary to be good for America. We don't have to worry. Companies will take care of everything. It doesn't work that way. Companies will take care of themselves. So we create a system where it's good the companies can take care of themselves, and we say, and by the way, if you're going to take care of yourself and you're going to use the social capital of this nation, you have to participate in the social life of this nation. You have to give something back, and part of that is employing people. Bob Herbert has a great column in today's New York Times, Despair of the Jobless, which gets right to our question, how can we stop the bleeding of American jobs? He talks about the bankruptcies, foreclosures, and evictions, the dreams deferred, the mental difficulties, anxiety, depression, the excessive drinking, abusive drugs, family violence. All of these are the consequences of unemployment. 3 million people unemployed who were not unemployed when George Bush came into office. And the cons will say, oh, but we're having a recovery. Well, yes, those people who earn their living by getting dividend checks are having a recovery. And for some weird reason, that's how we define, you know, by growth of gross domestic product, the total amount of money flowing around, that's how we define whether we're in a recession or not. I really think that we should take Robert Reich's suggestion and define the health of an economy by the number of people employed and the amount of money they're making. Because that's we the people. That's you and I. We have an official jobless rate of 6.2%, but you may remember during the Reagan administration when they decided to fiddle with the numbers because things weren't looking so good during the first Reagan recession. And then during the Bush administration, things got really bad. And it was during the first Bush administration, that they really jiggered the numbers. They said, we're going to screw these things up so that anybody, rather than counting everybody like they did during the Great Depression, if somebody is looking for a job and they can't find a job, they're considered unemployed, whether they've been looking for 6 weeks or 6 years. But Bush said, well, after a certain amount of time, after 6 months or 12 months, we're just not going to count them anymore. We'll call them the long-term unemployed or something. We're just not going to count them anymore. So the real unemployment in this nation is well over 10 or 12%. Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few moments. The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
Remember how we were told that globalization would be a boon for American workers? Blue collar was going to become white collar, low wage would move up to high tech, and everyone would sing zippity-doo-dah all the day long. They were feeding us globaloney. Dell, Microsoft, IBM, Oracle, Intel, CSC, and the other greed-headed giants of high tech are swiftly moving these very jobs, supposedly the jobs of our middle-class future, out of our country, to India, Pakistan, Russia, and elsewhere, making a killing by what they coldly refer to as offshore outsourcing. Instead of paying $60,000 to an American programmer, they can pay only $5,000 in India, then ship the product back into the lucrative U.S. market without paying tariffs and without lowering the consumer price. Mary Lawrence is one of the hundreds of thousands of American high-tech workers who've been stiffed. She worked at AMD, where she had won awards for setting production records and helping devise ways for the company to save money. AMD repaid her by sending her job offshore. A year and a half later, she's still out of work, even after applying to more than 500 other firms. "My job has gone away," she says. "There are just no jobs to be had." To add insult to injury, many high-tech American workers are forced to train their foreign replacements, refuse, and they lose any severance pay. Even some Republican leaders are gagging on this globaloney. Representative Don Manzullo of Illinois says the assumption was that while lower-skilled jobs would be done elsewhere, it would allow Americans to focus on higher-skilled, higher-paying opportunities. But what do you tell the PhD or professional engineer or architect or accountant or computer scientist to do next? Where do you tell them to go? This is Jim Hightower saying, if you're a high-tech CEO, you tell them to go to hell. And that's bad for America.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
You know, there was a time when if someone told you to do something, you did it. Bam, right on. No questions asked. It was yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. You never said no, you know? But you know, things are changing nowadays. It's a new day, babies. Folks want to take their own lives into their hands and make their own choices. No longer do they want to go along with the program because everybody says right. You know what I mean? Let me tell you what I'm talking about. You see, because
Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we're back. How can we stop the bleeding of American jobs all around the world? Here's an example of this. This is from IBM, a telephone conversation that was recorded, a conference call, an IBM conference call that was recorded and ultimately ended up on the New York Times website.
In the 90s, manufacturing went offshore. In the U.S. and throughout much of the world, the economy was pretty robust during that period of time. We're currently in an economy that is anemic, as you know, use one term to describe it. The economy certainly is less robust than it was a decade ago.
The economy's having troubles.
And move jobs in that environment is going to create more challenges for the reabsorption of the people who are displaced. U.S. workers are, or workers in the country where the work is being relocated from, will in many cases be asked to train their replacements if we're moving work to China.
How are we?
Maybe some Chinese workers will have to come to effect the transfer of knowledge needed to do that. That's going to raise a lot of tensions as you're training someone to do a job that you know is no longer going to be yours at the end of some fixed period of time.
These guys are sitting around saying, okay, we're going to send these jobs offshore. We got the white collar workers. We've got, see, it's like, you know, this happened to blue collar workers starting in the 1980s under Reagan. Big time. Shipping manufacturing jobs overseas. And the white collar workers of America sat back and said, doesn't affect me. Why do I care? That's a problem for the unions. They had a good time. They had made good money. They thought they had the world by the, you know, whatever. It's not my problem. And now it's changing. Boy, is it changing. And it is changing fast. Forrester Research, as I recall, suggests that over 3 million jobs. Oh, it's Deloitte Consulting. Here's a couple of different ones. In the next 15 years, American employers will move 3.3 million white-collar jobs. Now, keep in mind, there's only 100 million people who are working in the United States. And a good chunk of those people, about a third of them, are working for state, local, or federal governments or programs funded by them. So that leaves you with about 60 million workers in the actual private workforce. And of those people in the actual private workforce, about, I don't have the numbers on this. I'd have to go back and look at the SBA site. But my recollection is that about 10 to 20% of them are small businesses or self-employed people. I know here in Vermont, one of the interesting things about Vermont is that half of all people who work in Vermont are self-employed. It's not the case in the United States. It's more like 5 or 10% or less. But people working for small businesses are working for themselves. So we're down to, let's say, 50 million people. And these and we're talking to 3.3 million jobs. This is a huge chunk of jobs. And the taxes that those people would otherwise be paying, and the products that they would otherwise be buying with their paychecks. $136 billion in wages, according to Forrester Research, are going to vanish from our economy. That's up from $4 billion in wages that we lost in the year 2000. What can we do about this? Let's talk about this. What can we do about this? How can we stop the bleeding of U.S. jobs? You have an idea? You have a suggestion? 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937. Let me know. This is Tom Hartman, where democracy is still alive and well here on the IE America Radio Network.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Commission that manages whale populations has moved toward greater protection for the animals. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. At its summer meeting in Berlin, the International Whaling Commission voted to create a conservation committee to draw up stronger measures to protect whale populations. Kieran Mulvaney directs the nonprofit Whale and Dolphin Conservation Society. Mulvaney says the IWC action, which passed by a thin margin, could eventually help whale populations recover, but he says it might also further polarize the commercial whaling debate.
It's really difficult to get a sense of just what are going to be the consequences of this decision. It's very good on one level in that the Commission has expressed very much its keenness to follow the conservation aspect of its mandate, but half the Commission, you know, the whalers and their sympathizers, have said that they're not going to participate at all in any of these conservation efforts. So on the one hand, it could be looked at as just something else that's going to further divide an already very divided Commission.
Japan and Norway are the only countries with active whaling programs, and they argue that none of the whale species they hunt is in trouble. But Mulvaney says marine mammals face a growing list of threats, including toxic chemicals, noise pollution, fishing nets, and global warming.
The number of problems that are facing whales now is significantly greater than even when commercial whaling was at its height. That's really a lot of the motivation behind what happened in Berlin with the adoption of this conservation committee, to provide a forum to address all these other issues that are affecting whales, because we can no longer look at commercial whaling in isolation.
Mulvaney, who's written a new book called The Whaling Season, says the market for whale meat has virtually disappeared and only government subsidies keep commercial whalers in business. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're asking, how can we stop the bleeding of U.S. jobs? One of the folks in our Kahuna 2 in our chat room suggests that this person is in the business of buying and selling fine arts and antiques, and that folks in Rolls-Royces are lining up to sell stuff. Prices are falling. That's not a good sign for the economy. I've noticed the same thing out there in the art marketplace. It's fascinating stuff. Henry Clay, born in 1777, died in 1852, one of America's great statesmen. A lot of people actually remember Henry Clay. He was Secretary of State under John Quincy Adams, and he ran for president in 1824, 1832, and 1844. He's one of the most popular and influential political leaders in the history of the United States. Back then, there was this movement that was called the Anti-National Movement. Today we would call it free trade. Actually, they started calling it free trade at one point. The guy Albert Gallatin was the head of the anti-national movement. And Henry Clay suggested, he put forward this thing, a speech. You can find a copy of it. It was in 1832, a speech in Kentucky called In Defense of the American System Against the British Colonial System. And what he suggested was that there should be a three-part program to save America. One, there should be a strong national bank so we had a stable currency. Number two, tariffs to protect home industry against foreign, what he called, trade wars. And three, government subsidies of roads, canals, rail lines, and other parts of the commons. The anti-national movement, also known as the free trade movement, was led by former U.S. Treasury Secretary Albert Gallatin, who was actually Swiss. And I just want to read, I got a couple of calls here, I want to get right to them, but I just want to read you this one, a couple of quick quotes here from Clay, because they are so to the topic. He says, "When gentlemen have succeeded in their design of an immediate or gradual destruction of the American system, what is their substitute? Free trade! Free trade! The call for free trade is as unavailing as the cry of a spoiled child in its nurse's arms or the moon for the moon or the stars that glitter in the firmament of heaven. It never has existed. Free trade never will exist." Gentlemen deceive themselves, Henry Clay said. It is not free trade they are recommending to our acceptance. It is, in effect, the British colonial system that we are invited to adopt. Amazing. He was suggesting, and he successfully argued, for tariffs to protect American industries, and it led to prosperity in the United States. Well, if you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. How can we stop the bleeding of U.S. jobs? Rob in Pennsylvania is on the line. Rob, what do you think? How do you think we should stop this job leak?
Rob of opednews.com.
Hey, Rob. Oh, by the way, somebody called and left a message with our board operator a little while ago saying, where you were talking about a story about George Bush being accused of sexual harassment. Where did that story come from? I had not actually referenced that story on this show, so he must have been listening to somebody else on the network. But the story was on your website, wasn't it, on opednews.com?
It was.
Okay. I'm assuming it's still there.
It's still there.
Okay.
It's an interesting story.
Yep. Okay.
And the story is basically that if this was Bill Clinton, every news media outlet in the world would be picking it up. But because it's George Bush and the media have been beaten down and cowed and turned into just a propaganda arm of the Bush administration, nobody's touching it.
Yeah, I understand and agree. But let's get back to the bleeding of U.S. jobs.
Okay, here, yeah. Well,
you had a suggestion on how to stop the leak?
I see things. In terms of manufacturing, Bill Clinton gave it away, basically, when he signed the World Trade Organization agreement. We've handed over our manufacturing, so those jobs, anybody who's left with them are pretty just lucky, and it's just an odd chance. But where we still have a chance is business outsourcing.
Explain.
The last that I looked at it, business outsourcing is basically what Bush wants to do with the federal government, for example. But it's you have a business instead of I have a very tiny business, but I outsource to a local accountant my payroll. And so instead of hiring somebody in-house to do my payroll and issuing paychecks each week, I have somebody who does that and keeps a record of all that and generates the W-2 statements at the end of the year.
But there's a limit to that before it becomes just a Ponzi scheme, Rob. I mean, if that's going to be national policy, it is a Ponzi scheme.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Ponzi.
Well, it's Charles Ponzi's idea that he started in Pie Alley in Boston back in the 20s was, in the 30s, was that he was promising people 50% return on their investment within 60 days.
Oh, no.
And so people would give him money. And then he started, and he paid out that 50% with money that he got from new people. And eventually he wasn't, you know, and he brought in millions. He actually had 5 full-time employees just to count the money.
Well, what's that got to do with me outsourcing my payroll?
Well, the point is that if the solution to there not being jobs is that we take the pieces of a job, the pieces of a company that are being done right now, and say, okay, we're going to create businesses around these pieces, and then those businesses are going to have to create businesses around their pieces. I mean, you know, what your CPA is going to have to outsource. You know, ultimately, it becomes like a Ponzi scheme. It will implode. It doesn't.
I don't think it's that complicated.
The benefit of a business, Rob, is that you're actually providing something that people are willing to pay for. And that's the peril of a service economy, is that if I pay you to read op-ed news and you pay your CPA to do your bookkeeping and your CPA pays me to entertain him, and then I pay you to do op-ed news, we can apparently do that all day long. But who's going to grow our food? Who's going to make the clothes that we wear? At some point, if there's not a strong manufacturing base, if we are not providing for our basic essentials, it's going to collapse.
Well, my point is that, frankly, I think that the manufacturing is scary. I happened to go today to a factory where they make real stuff. They take raw metal and they pour it, and they actually make molds, and then they process it, and they add screws. They drill it. They do the basic stuff that they make stuff with. And what amazed me was all the equipment was 30 years old, and it was like being in a movie.
Yeah.
But my point with outsourcing is right now they say that outsourcing, which is primarily about business services, is about an $8 to $10 billion business, and it's going to grow in the next 5 years to be an $80 billion business. And most of where that outsourcing is going is to India and the Caribbean states, and that's where the service jobs, where people still are making decent money, are going to get killed. And unless there's something
done, it's happening. Yeah, it's happening because
you can
hire somebody with a master's degree in electrical engineering or computer sciences in India for $12,500 a year.
Exactly.
You have to pay $70,000 a year here.
It's going to explode in the next 5 years. You're talking about $1.5 billion. I heard you talk about leaving the country. It's going to be $80 billion leaving the country in the next 5 years. And unless we do something to block that, to stop it in some way, to protect our jobs, you know, and look at Bush.
That's my point, Rob. And I don't think that the solution is going to be that we start outsourcing stuff ourselves or things like that. I think the solution has to be legislative. We have to return to the kind of protectionist policies, not radical protectionism, but rational protectionism that we've had in the United States since the year after the Constitution was ratified, right up to the beginning of the Reagan-Bush administration.
That's what I'm talking about, bro.
Okay. Then we're singing the same song.
I do a little bit to my local accounting guys, and it gives some work to the local people. But you're talking about Bush handing over 400,000 or 800,000 jobs. They're going to go out of the country.
Many of them, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's already happening, actually, in many local governments. There was an interesting story in the paper a couple of weeks ago about how one of the states in the Northeast, I think it was New Jersey, I could be wrong, it might have been Delaware, had actually outsourced the people who answer the phone to answer questions of welfare recipients. You know, welfare recipients call up and say, where's my check, or how do I do this or that or the other thing. They've got a whole Q&A kind of thing. And they had outsourced this to a private company that they thought was a local company, and that company had in turn outsourced them to India.
Yeah.
And so welfare recipients in this state were calling India, and when it got into the newspapers, they had to stop it. Rob, thanks for your call. I appreciate your comments. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. Billy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, you're so smart, but I want to take the other side of this argument again.
Great.
Let's start with this. So, nice work. You quoted a guy from 100 years ago. That's exactly the point. You know what I mean by that?
No.
Okay.
I mean, we can quote people from 200 years ago if you want. How about Jefferson?
Well, my point is that I'm a futurist. I don't want to look
You want to quote people from the future?
Exactly. I don't want to look to the past for ideas about how to run modern businesses or modern countries because, let's face it, they had slavery, too. They were not right about everything.
No, but the reality is, Billy, that we've been through these cycles at least three times in a big way in the United States where we opened
true.
Up to free trade, we crashed, we became protectionist, and we recovered. I mean, this has happened in the United States. So I'm not saying that Henry Clay should be necessarily the guy who's given us marching orders. The guy's dead. But we can look at the past and we can learn from it, can't we?
Sure, but the fact is that the thing that we've never learned from the past is that our political system is the problem, not our economic system. We could make the kinds of rules that would ameliorate this somewhat. For example, we need the kind of tax laws where the managers of business shouldn't get overpaid for getting rid of our jobs. But on the other hand, now let's take the other hand. You know, why should India or China buy my computers if I don't let any of their people help build them?
For the same reason that right now American consumers are walking into Kmart and buying Chinese things, Chinese-made things, and not caring about the fact that they didn't make them. I mean,
exactly.
The bottom line is people buy computers because it's what they need. The content, except in the most nationalistic of environments, which right now we don't have here.
Yeah, we're not North Korea.
Right. Except in the most nationalistic of environments, people buy things based on their needs, not on where they're produced.
Yeah, by efficient production, we get the best price, and therefore, you know, we should have to work less.
Well, it's not necessarily the best price.
It's true that America and our standard of living has to go down a little bit so that the third world can come up a little bit. Are you really against that?
Yeah, I am.
So you're a nationalist first as opposed to a humanist.
No, because the experience that we have out there is that when we go into third world countries proclaiming that we are going to raise their standard of living, and Mexico is a great example of this. We're going to go into Mexico and everybody's going to make more money because our companies are going to go down there and they're going to be able to hire all these people for $5 a day. Poverty has exploded in Mexico since NAFTA. It's gotten worse. The situation in Mexico has gotten demonstrably worse. It just doesn't work the way that these free traders suggest or these anti-nationalists suggest.
You know, I think that it's true that Nike doesn't help anybody out.
What happens is the big corporations skim everything off the top, and the labor is just a raw material that gets used. Bill, I'm going to ask you to summarize because I got Mark in Alabama on the line, too, and we're running out of time here.
Well, it's impossible to summarize this. This will be an ongoing discussion. Let me just say one thing against this business thing. I heard the Ayn Rand guy on again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the silliest thing in the world, him saying, well, you know, business has to have a voice, so I have a voice. He has a voice. It's his voice. He doesn't get another vote by having business also vote his arguments.
Yeah.
He was just dead wrong. Just to show you know, I'm not always on business side.
I agree. Thank you, Billy. I appreciate your comments. Thanks for calling in. 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number, 1-800-825-5937. It's about 13 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we have Mark in Alabama on the line. Mark, what's up?
Hey, Mark. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but audio better. How about you?
I'm doing just great. Wanted to let you know I'm a free trader and kind of an anti-protectionist, but I'm for a very high standard of living. Now, a couple things I wanted to point out. I understand your views, and I agree with some of them, but I think some of the things you're not pointing out is that the United States leads the world in job creation also, and the pay of those jobs also leads the world.
The United States led the world in job creation up until 2000. We have not in the last 3 years.
Total numbers... I believe we have. From a percentage standpoint, we haven't.
I mean, we have 300 million people in the United States. I would
China
suggest to you, Mark,
people.
That if you compare us with China, China is leading the world in job creation right now, not the United States.
I believe, and my numbers may be as much as a year old, that in the total number of the jobs we leave and the total dollar pay we leave. But that's just one point I wanted to make. But we still are creating jobs at a very good rate, and we're creating high-paying jobs. Another point is unemployment is only at 6%. Historically, that's not terrible. It's pretty average, actually.
Well, you can't compare it historically, Mark, because the historic unemployment numbers always included what we call discouraged workers. Now, you've got another 7, 8, 10, maybe as much as 12% of people who are unemployed who we no longer count in our statistics because under the senior Bush administration, they stopped counting people who have been out of work for more than 6 to 12 months.
That's correct, but they're not actively pursuing jobs,
That's not the case. That's not the criteria that they use.
Okay, well, let me. I'll concede to you on that. I don't think that it's a 12% addition. I think it's possibly a 12% total, but I'll concede to you on that because I don't have the numbers. But kind of getting to the core issues of what's causing this, you've hit on one. The NAFTA agreement obviously is the free trade agreement is a big part of it. But another part of it, and this is something that hits home with me because it's kind of my job, is to put people out of work. where I go and the products that I sell, and there's a million people in the country doing what I'm doing, and that's improving productivity at our factories and plants. And the way we sell product is eliminating labor and putting in capital equipment that machines are doing what people used to do.
But, Mark,
and,
that started in the 1700s with the Industrial Revolution. That, I mean, yes, that's true, but that's not the big – we got about 30 seconds left here, Mark, for your final comment.
Okay. That is, though, you know, productivity – if you look at the productivity gains through the 90s, they're some of the highest productivity improvements in recent history. So the continuation of high productivity is going to eliminate jobs. I know that's not what people want to hear, but a lot of the factories that I go into, a lot of the jobs are jobs that people don't want to have.
Great. And thank you, Mark. I appreciate your comments. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. This is Tom Hartman on IE America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Hi, Tom Baudette for Motel6.com. Next time you're goofing around on the internet, you know, in other words, the next time you're at work, click on over to Motel6.com for Click 6 Web Bargains. Those are special discounts at hundreds of locations that you can only get when you book online. Just look for the Click 6 icon at Motel6.com and then get back to work. I'm Tom Baudette, and we'll leave the light and the modem on for you. And a core hotel.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time.
I didn't think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. Well, let's move on to somebody who is evil but very bright. That would be Ari Fleischer at the briefing today.
The job of anybody who is the White House press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking and why he's thinking it. And that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, right.
The job of the press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
When do I get to my Game Boy? Hey, it's time for lunch. I want to take a nap. How do you spell Putin? Let me see. Who's the president of Afghanistan?
You know he tried to kill my dad? Oh, my God. There's Laura with my milk. Faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
All righty, then.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good old Van Morrison. What a great musician. And a great, what do you call somebody who's a native of Ireland? Irishman, that's right. Ireland is one of my favorite countries in the world. Listen, I was in, just a few years ago, the last time I was in Southeast Asia, I think it was 3 years ago, we were in Thailand, Taiwan, South Korea. I was on my way to India. And these countries are littered, particularly Thailand, with buildings that are half built that are now literally rusting. What happened was part of it was George Soros and his currency speculation stuff, popping that bubble, but a lot of it really had to do with the fact that these countries had reached a certain standard of living as a result of making cheap stuff for us, and their employees started unionizing and demanding a decent wage, and the businesses looked around and said, this is nuts, we don't have to pay these people this kind of money, and they all moved to China, where jobs are being created at an incredible rate. Adam Smith, I mean, let's go back to Adam Smith. This is really fundamental stuff. Read Wealth of Nations, published in 1776. And apologies, Billy, yeah, he's an old dead guy, but he has defined the argument. The whole rationale of international trade, one government trading with another government, or the people of one country with the people of another country, is that different people have different natural resources and therefore have the ability to uniquely produce different things. If my country produces good wool sweaters and your country produces good cheese, and I make lousy cheese and you don't have wool to make sweaters, let's trade. And then we'll both have cheese and sweaters. One of the examples that Adam Smith talks about. But what has happened since the Reagan-Bush revolution of the 1980s is something very different. Instead, what we have done is we have given license to these rapacious multinational corporations, which had previously been strip-mining the world for raw materials, for minerals, for food, for things that they could sell, and said, you may strip-mine the world now for human labor. It's the new resource. And while human beings cannot move across borders without visas, it's very difficult to get into the United States. We're saying now companies can move jobs all over the place, move in, and when we go in and we basically strip mine their labor, it devastates their countries. And we can't have this. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
But it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
truth seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. U.S. military officials say two more soldiers have now been killed and yet another wounded in a gun battle in Baghdad earlier. And then only hours later, an explosion at the Jordanian embassy in Baghdad killed at least 11 people. Jordan has already condemned that attack as being cowardly. We hear more now from correspondent Nina Maria Potts.
The soldiers of the 1st Armored Division are said to have been involved in a small arms firefight in Baghdad's al-Rashid district at about 11 p.m. local time on Wednesday. There's no word on any casualties among the attackers. 55 American troops have been killed in a series of ambushes and bomb attacks on occupying forces since America declared the end to major combat on the 1st of May. Meanwhile, remains are still being identified after a bomb explosion at the Jordanian embassy in Baghdad. It's still unclear exactly how many were killed. Nina Maria Potts reporting.
Meanwhile, hundreds of Iraqis have now started training with U.S. forces in Baghdad in an effort to build an entirely new Iraqi army. U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Ray Combs says his soldiers are essentially rebuilding that army from nothing.
They're trained in basic military skills. We also include some specialty training. We train officers in the roles and responsibilities of officers. The same is true for the non-commissioned officers.
This new Iraqi army is designed to protect key infrastructure sites at first, such as bridges and marketplaces, from attacks and possible sabotage operations by rebels. There are also plans for 8 battalions, with each group consisting of about 850 men. Coalition forces in Tikrit are also planning to train recruits for Iraq's Civil Defense Force. West African peacekeepers today finally moved into the Liberian capital of Monrovia, greeted by thousands of cheering Liberians. The peacekeepers are mostly Nigerian soldiers who are just the first of more than 3,000 expected in Liberia. Liberia's President Charles Taylor was supposed to have resigned before a joint session of his country's legislature today. He now says he'll do that Monday.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Feeling. Whoa, 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 whoa. Feeling. Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
A Muslim militant's been sentenced to death in Indonesia now after being convicted in last October's Bali bombings, but attorneys for the man known only as Amrozi say they will appeal the verdict. He's the first among a group of alleged militants standing trial after the nightclub attacks that killed more than 200 people. A nurse in Missouri is free today after charges he caused the deaths of 10 patients at a veterans hospital in Columbia were dropped. Prosecutors allege Richard Williams gave the victims fatal doses of a paralytic chemical in 1992. Recent scientific analysis, though, shows the chemical can also occur in the body naturally.
Hey, honey, I rented some videos. Thought maybe we could just stay in tonight, snuggle on the couch.
Great. I'll put one in.
Honey, this is a video about how to repair a washing machine.
I know. Shh. I love this part.
Have a passion for fixing things? Sears has over 4.5 million parts for all major brands of home appliances and lawn equipment. Call 1-800-4-MY-HOME. Click on Sears.com or come into a Sears Parts and Repair Center. Where can you find parts for all major brands, no matter where you bought them? Sears. Good life, great price.
In Ireland, a man convicted of being the leader of a dissident Irish Republican group known as the Real IRA has been jailed now for 20 years. Michael McKevitt was found guilty of directing terrorism as well as having membership in an illegal organization. More from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
Security was tight at the special criminal court in Dublin as McKevitt was driven in for sentencing. It's the first time the charge of directing terrorism has been brought before a court in the Irish Republic. McKevitt has been named as the leader of the Real IRA, which was behind the Omagh bombing in 1998, which killed 29 people. The group was formed after a split with the mainstream IRA, the main dissident group opposed to the Northern Ireland peace process. McKevitt's lawyers say the 53-year-old will appeal his 20-year sentence. Suzanne Chislett, London.
McKevitt was apparently prosecuted largely on the evidence of a former FBI spy who had managed to infiltrate the Real IRA. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Sex and the single driver. No, it's not the latest XXX film or a video on golf swings. And you'll never guess its producer-director. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
I'm Bobby Likas on the street, talking to people who love their cars. Excuse me, sir, you're putting a car cover on your vehicle?
You bet. I protect my car outside from the weather with a car cover, and from dings and dust when it's inside the garage.
Is it easy to put on?
Easy to put on and take off.
What's it made of?
Block It Fabric by Kimberly Clark. Great protection at a great value.
Take it from people who love their cars. Buy a car cover made from Block It Fabric by Kimberly Clark.
Sex and the single driver is a favorite feature of insurance companies. And if you're a middle-aged, married female, you're the star of this show. Yes, statistics show younger drivers are involved in more fatalities than mature adults. And singles have less safe driving records than those in wedding bliss. And here's the clincher, gentlemen. Males are deadlier drivers than females. In fact, a National Safety Council survey found fatal accident rates were 63% higher for men. So ladies, start your engines and enjoy the spotlight. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program, broadcasting coast to coast live on terrestrial radio stations, bounced off the ABC Star Guide 3 satellite from the IE America radio network, broadcasting live from outer space to people who own Ford, Chrysler, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Mazda, Land Rover, Dodge, Jeep, Mini, Volkswagen, Audi, Nissan, Infiniti, and Jaguar automobiles equipped with the Sirius radio satellite system. And also streaming audio on the internet from radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, with archives at whiterosesociety.org. This is Tom Hartman, and we are talking in this hour about should we abolish the Federal Reserve Bank. You know, it's the last hour of the day on Thursday, and every Thursday in our last hour, I try to get into a realm that really stretches us, that takes us beyond our assumptions. In fact, that talks about things that most people didn't even know that they didn't know, and gets into those. We call it our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe. Let's talk about the Federal Reserve. G. Edward Griffin is the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, a second look at the Federal Reserve. He's a contributing editor for The New American Magazine, president of America Media, and founder of the Reality Zone. Mr. Griffin, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. Let's talk about the Fed. First of all, my recollection, my understanding of this, is to go back to the beginning. One of the schisms that actually first led to the creation of the Democratic-Republican Party by Thomas Jefferson, or his consolidation of the Democratic and the Republican parties that had both split off from the Federalists in the 1790s, early 1790s, was around Alexander Hamilton's suggestion that there should be a federal bank to pay off the state's debts from the Revolutionary War and that sort of thing. And then there was this second federal bank that was headquartered in Philadelphia that ended up going bankrupt in, as I recall, 1849. And some say that led to the Great Depression of 1856. And then there was a third one in the latter part of the 19th century. And I don't remember the years on that one. So that would make the Fed the fourth. Is that right?
That's correct. It's the fourth experiment with what they call central banking, which, as you know, is not banking at all. It's a control over the monetary system. But they like to use the word bank because it gives it a kind of an aura of acceptability and respectability.
Yeah, and Jefferson and Madison and those guys were just totally opposed to this. They were all banking should be at the state level.
Well, that's right. And you know what? The whole idea of this central banking comes from Europe. And when the American colonies formed into the American government, the Union, they adopted pretty much the philosophies and the practices that were extant in Europe at that time. And, you know, the reality is that few of the founding fathers, very few of them, really understood money. Some of them did. I mean, some of them were very astute on it, and I think Jefferson was certainly one of them that wrote long essays on the topic, which would stand up to scrutiny today and be very scholarly.
Yeah.
But most of those
and John Hancock as well.
And Hancock, yes, and Hamilton, but and Morris. But, you know, most of those fellows really didn't understand it, just like today. I think if you were to go to Congress and to the Senate and sit down and talk to our elected representatives, you find that relatively few of them really understand today how money comes into being and what the Federal Reserve System is. And, you know, that's pretty pathetic because it's a reflection of the frame of understanding that is held by most people, the electorate. Very few people on the street know much about our monetary system.
Well, let's get right down to the nuts and bolts here, then, and make this real for people. The Federal Reserve Bank is neither federal, has no reserves, and is not a bank, right?
Correct.
Okay, let's take one at a time.
It's close enough to correct to get a B plus on the test.
Okay.
Actually, there are some minor reserves that are held, but they're so minuscule that they don't really show up on the radar.
And those are basically you're talking about the money that the Fed uses to buy and sell treasuries to try and influence the money supply.
I'm talking about when the member banks sign on to the system, they have to pledge some kind of asset, but it's very minuscule.
Okay, so first of all, the Federal Reserve is not federal. It's actually owned by these, is it 10 or 12 member banks?
It's owned by the participating banks. That's correct. It's not federal. It's about as federal as FedEx.
Yeah. Okay, and why do people think of it as a government institution? Why is Alan Greenspan appointed by the president if it's not a federal institution?
Well, of course, if you understand the rationale of the people that created the Fed back in 1913 when it was passed into law, and even earlier in 1910 when they drafted the proposed legislation, one of the things that the people decided they had to do was to convince the voters that it was time to bring banking under control. There was a big slogan in those days that was to break the grip of the money trust. People were concerned at the turn of the century about the concentration of financial power in the hands of these large financial institutions on Wall Street, and there was pressure to bring about legislation to reform banking in America. And so the bankers decided not to wait for true reform to spring up from the grassroots. They decided to take the lead in the reform, and they became the ones that were calling for it louder than anyone else so that they would be given the option of drafting the reform. And that's exactly what happened. The so-called legislative reform of banking was designed by the bankers themselves just to preempt anybody else from doing it. And
just give us control over your money supply and everything will be fine.
Yes, exactly. And, of course, they still go through all the motions of making it seem like this is a government agency and it's all determined by the voters and so forth. But in reality, and now this is the clincher here, in reality, the Federal Reserve System is a cartel. And that's really the best way to understand it. It's not really a private corporation in the sense of General Motors or AT&T or something like that, although it has some elements of private ownership. But the stock in the Federal Reserve Corporation does not carry voting rights.
Now, what does that mean for you and me?
It doesn't mean an awful lot, to tell you the truth. It just means it's part of the appearance of being something which it is not. As your little intro was so accurate today, everything we think we know is wrong. And we think we know that the Federal Reserve System is a government agency. It's not. And then those critics of the Federal Reserve say, well, we think we know it's a private corporation. It's not. It's a hybrid. It's a blend of a public corporation and a private corporation.
Sort of like OPEC.
It was designed specifically to house a cartel. So that we're back to that. The Federal Reserve is no different than a banana cartel, a coffee cartel, or any of the others. It just happens to be a banking cartel.
Yeah. Let's get this to practical stuff here, because I think, you know, a lot of our listeners, many of our listeners, I'm sure, would find the arcana interesting or the technicalities. But I think most people are more impacted by, you know, what does this mean to me? How does this affect my pocketbook? What are the alternatives? What should I be saying to my congressperson about what I want done differently? Those kinds of issues.
Sure.
Let's get right down to where the... Now, I remember, I think it was during the Nixon administration, the dollar bills that were in circulation stopped saying silver certificate on the top and started saying Federal Reserve note on the top.
That
was one, and you know, we used to have this gold in Fort Knox that was supposed to back our currency. What has been the consequence of those changes, and are these things that we should be looking at undoing? I mean, are you suggesting that we take apart the Fed, for example, and go back to the kind of system that we've reverted back to three times now in the history of this country of states individually are issuing their own currencies?
Yeah, well, there's a whole basket full of questions there. Let's take backwards and go from the last one, which is freshest in my mind. Yes, that's exactly what I'm advocating, is to get this cartel off of the economy. It's like a dead short across the economy. But your first question is...
Just a second. If the states issue their currencies, then how do we engage in trade with other nations?
Well, I'm not even advocating that states issue currencies. I think that... The federal government is perfectly authorized to issue a currency, provided, as the Constitution states rather clearly, that it is backed by bullion, silver, or gold. It has to be intrinsic. The Constitution forbids issuing money that's based on credit or debt. And, of course, that's what the Federal Reserve System is institutionalized to do. So there's nothing wrong with an American currency. In fact, it's a natural evolution of the monetary system is to have nations issue their currencies, although there's nothing to prevent private individuals or corporations from issuing currencies either. And if they happen to be more useful, then, you know, there's nothing stopping Americans or foreigners from using Disneyland books for money if they want to, you know?
Yeah, but hang on just a second here. I'm looking at the Constitution, and it doesn't, Section 8, Article 5, the Congress shall have the power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures. It doesn't say anything about gold.
Well, no, it doesn't say anything about gold, but you've got me here because I don't have the Constitution in front of me, and I cannot recall the sections. But there is a section in there which is pretty clear about not using credit. And, of course, when you go back to the debates at the time the Constitution was written, and you see what these fellows meant when they said coin money, that meant metal.
Mm-hmm.
When they used that word, it's different than the way we use it today. I mean, it's not like coining a phrase. You can't just make it out of anything. The ones who drafted the Constitution, when they said coin money, they meant coins made of precious metals.
Yeah, but if I want to buy a case or a shipload of French wine and I've got to send them a ship filled with gold coins, I mean, we've got a real problem here.
Well, it's not a real problem. If you can send them a contract, you can say that we will keep the gold coins over here in safe storage, And this piece of paper, if you bring it over, you can have your coins anytime you wish. Or
well,
you can.
Now we're back to fiat money.
Well, no, it's not fiat because it's backed by those gold coins. You see?
Oh, I see.
See, it has the gold coins behind it. That's how our money actually came into existence. There were certificates of deposit for real coins in a vault somewhere. So instead of carrying those coins around or shipping them, as you say, you just deliver the receipt. And okay. It's a bearer receipt, you see.
Right. We're speaking, by the way, it's 19 minutes after the hour. We've got about a minute left in the segment. We're talking with G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, A Second Look at the Federal Reserve. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And Mr. Griffin, if you can hang on over the break, we'll continue this conversation on the other end of it. But just real quickly, in maybe 5 or 10 or 15 seconds, you can just give us a teaser here, a clue. Do you think that the current Fed system is leading us down the road to an economic disaster?
Well, I definitely do. It has done that for quite a while. In fact, our first Great Depression can be traced directly to the action of the Federal Reserve System shortly after it was created.
Interesting. Okay. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment with Edward Griffin, author of The Creature of Jekyll Island, A Second Look at the Federal Reserve, asking, should we abolish the Federal Reserve Bank? Stay tuned.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued.
Two of them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Well, welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. If you'd like to call in, if you have a question for our guest, a comment on this topic or any of the other topics we've talked about today, but, you know, as long as our guest is on here, let's try to keep it to this topic. We're speaking, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Feel free to call. We're talking with G. Edward Griffin, the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, A Second Look at the Federal Reserve. And Mr. Griffin, is there a website where people can find more information about you and your book?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I'd like to have people come to our website. It's Reality Zone. It's real easy to remember. It's realityzone.com.
Very straightforward. Great. Thank you very much. Now, back to, you know, we were talking about a disaster could be coming as a result of the Fed. Alexander Hamilton would have argued that there would be a disaster if there isn't a central bank, that things would become much less stable if there wasn't some regulation of some sort. The pro-central bank folks say that it was the action of the Fed that actually made the Great Depression less severe than it was. And, of course, there are folks on your side, I think, who are saying that it was caused by the Fed. How can you say that it was caused by the Fed?
Well, you have to understand that the purpose of the Fed is to create money. It brings money into being literally out of thin air, although they like to say it's based on debt. But the Federal Reserve has the ability to create money or extinguish money. And that is the very foundation of a boom-bust cycle. When you expand the money supply and contract the money supply arbitrarily, you start putting ripples and then waves and then finally tidal waves into the economy.
But if I may interrupt you there,
sure.
My recollection is that the Fed back in the 20s didn't actually start reducing the money supply by reducing the discount rate until mid-1930, and the crash happened in 29.
Well, that's not quite true, because they did contract the money supply by reducing the amount of credit that was available through the Federal Reserve system. They did this very drastically just before the big crash. But, you know, had they not done that, it would have happened anyway, because they had inflated the money supply so drastically before that.
I see. If I can pause you just for a second, sure. We have another break coming up in about 3 minutes, and I want to get this caller in. We have Ben in Illinois on the line. If you'd like to call the program, it's 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Ben, welcome to the program. You have a question for Edward Griffin?
Yes. You know, my problem is that I think that, you know, gold, silver, the traditional precious metals that one place, you know, bases specie on are actually fairly irrelevant to our modern technological society. And I'm wondering what you would think about establishing the basis of capital to be petroleum or some other form of energy. In other words, since since money represents work done, and pretty directly in our economy, energy represents work done, shouldn't we be basing our money on energy?
Well, there are a lot of theories about what money should be based on, and some of them are, you know, just as good as others, as long as we sort of agree up front that it should be based on something of intrinsic value, either work done or something which is useful. If we agree that it should be based on something like that rather than debt, then I don't think we have any problem, because we can say, well, this would be just as good as that. However, historically, it has always turned out that precious metals have won the contest. When given a free chance to compete without political intervention, precious metals have always come out ahead because they have so many attributes that things like petroleum, for example, would not have.
Isn't the main attribute that they don't oxidize? That they don't go away? I mean, petroleum goes away. If it was iron, iron goes away.
Of course, oil can be lost. It can be burned and so forth, whereas gold and silver, it just get converted from one form to another.
Yeah, they just stick around.
You can carry gold and silver.
That music means we've got a break coming up. If you can hold that thought, we'll pick it back up on the other end of the break here. This will be a little shorter one. You're listening to Tom Hartman on the Talk Radio for the rest of us here on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
A 7-week strike at Hyundai Motors of South Korea is at an end, and workers are declaring victory. The strike pitted nearly 40,000 Hyundai employees against a carmaker whose inventory shortages forced it to halt production at factories in 5 countries. Hyundai estimates it lost $1.2 billion in lost output due to the strike. With their victory, workers will enjoy a wage increase that's nearly 3 times the rate of inflation, and beginning on September 1st, Hyundai employees will only have to work 5 days a week. Nam-Yol Jo is Deputy Director of Policy for the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions, or KCTU.
We are a member of OECD, and the average is 1,800 hours a week in labor work. But in Korea, we work more than 2,400 hours, so we don't have enough time to enjoy our lives, and there are a lot of accidents that happen because we work a lot. To solve this problem, we are suggesting 5 days work a week.
The workers also won protection against layoffs and a much greater role in the management of Hyundai. Union members are expected to ratify the deal tomorrow.
The Supreme Court of India strikes a surprising blow against the country's unions. In a ruling yesterday, the court declared that Indian workers may have the right to bargain collectively, but they do not have the right to strike, especially if it harms or inconveniences the populace as a whole. The decision is part of a docket of cases relating to the mass firing of 176,000 government workers in the state of Tamil Nadu last month after a million of them went on strike. Earlier, the Supreme Court upheld the mass firing but suggested the government reinstate all but a couple thousand workers. So far, all but 6,000 are back on the job.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We have grown
Although our love is still special, let's take a chance and fly away somewhere alone.
It's been too long since we took the time. No one's to blame. My no time flies so quickly.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, A Second Look at the Federal Reserve, and whose website is www.realityzone.com. Should we abolish the Federal Reserve Bank? Mr. Griffin, we've got a whole bunch of other things I want to get to with the show here today, so we need to wrap this up in the next five or 10 minutes or thereabouts. And I've tossed a couple of questions at you. We, you know, Ben's comment, I think, is pretty much wrapped up, but we also have Raman Santa Fe on the line, and he has a question for you. If you'd like to be on the program today, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And let's go to Rama for the question, and then Mr. Griffin can answer yours and perhaps some of the ones that I've tossed out there, and we can wrap this up. Rama?
Hi,
welcome.
There.
Hey.
Hey. I just wanted to say that I actually spent a lot of time in Montpelier, Vermont, and I lived in Chelsea, Vermont. And I'm totally familiar with the neighborhood you've broadcast from.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, but I wanted to say that I've read parts of The Creature from Jekyll Island, and right now there is a secret law that was put into effect, and it's called NASARA, and it totally abolishes, or shall we say, absorbs the Federal Reserve into the U.S. Treasury system. And we go back on a gold-backed economy, which is the thesis of Alan Greenspan's, shall we say, when he came in. And a gold-backed economy is also what the euro is stepping up to. This is why it is totally in a process, shall we say, of changing the way money is on this planet. But I just wondered if you have heard of the NASARA law, the Security and Reformation Act.
Yes, I have. I've studied it very carefully. And it's a total myth. It's not going to happen the way everybody is talking about it. It's so-called secret laws that just don't happen in the real world. This is one of those urban myths that gets a lot of circulation on the Internet. It has a lot of feel-good features to it. People can sit back and say, oh, wonderful, everything's going to be taken care of. There are these mysterious people out there that are passing a secret law, and they're looking out for us so we can relax now. And it's a total myth. As far as I can tell, I've seen no evidence that there's anything about this NASARA deal that is authentic. Now, I stand to be corrected if somebody could prove that, but right now I would say to anybody who's counting on NASARA or anything similar to solving the problems, don't wait, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah. So what do you see happening in the next year, the next 5 years, the next 10 years, and how should people respond to it? I mean, should we be pulling our cash out of the banks and stuffing it under our mattresses? Should we be buying gold? Should we be putting money in the stock market? Should we be lobbying to for an end of the Fed? And if so, what's going to happen in that case?
Well, I'm not a forecaster. I can only tell you what I think is true in terms of long-term effects. But just regarding dates and when they'll happen, I don't know any more than anyone else. But I do think that our monetary system is based on some very, very bad principles, the principle of being able to create money out of thin air and being able to expand and contract the money supply. I think that historically has always resulted in disaster for the nation that has endorsed such principles. So I see nothing but disaster in the economy ahead. When and under what circumstances, I really don't know. I'm just amazed that they've been able to keep the bubble expanding as long as they have. But they do have tremendous levers of power, so they're able to manipulate things that they couldn't do before. But as far as your advice is concerned, I would certainly advise anyone to be very conservative in planning for long-term economic growth. I would try to get out of debt. I would certainly have some tangible assets in my investment portfolio if I had anything to invest. You know, I'd get out of derivatives, I'd get into solid investments that produce real income, not just based on the greater fool theory that somebody is going to be a greater fool than I and pay more than I did for this worthless thing. So I should be very, very conservative in all those issues.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Griffin. G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, A Second Look at the Federal Reserve. You can find out more about him in the book at www.realityzone.com. Thank you for being on the program today.
All right, thank you.
I appreciate it. Okay, looking at our emails today, actually over the last few days, they've been stacking up, and comments on our message board. It's actually... you might find it more useful rather than emailing me to post things on the message board. I do read it, and also a whole bunch of other people do, and you generate a lively conversation, and particularly when folks are looking for a resource or information, it's a good place. You go to TomHartmanShow.com and click on the message board, and it'll take you to our message board. Reynold, and I'm not sure where Reynold is located. The Hotmail account. Reynolds says, hello, Tom. A lot of my progressive friends have come to the same conclusion and are becoming active in the Democratic Party. As for me, I voted for Dizzy Gillespie in 64. Anyhow, now that you've disgraced yourself by becoming a Democrat, I offer you another scandalous idea. Consider this. Support the Second Amendment. Very few progressives have seriously considered it. It's worth looking at for a number of obvious reasons. You want to, and he goes on and on and on. Yeah, interesting. My first thought was I really need to do a show on this, and I was going to pull out, and I have it around here someplace. In fact, I did pull it out, and it didn't make it into this clip. The Virginia Resolution of Rights. This is written by Thomas Jefferson and friends for the state of Virginia before the Declaration of Independence was signed, back when Virginia was just a sovereign state. And it was about how to regulate Virginia and about what the specific rights are that individuals living in Virginia would have. It was a Bill of Rights for the state of Virginia. And in that, they lay out this language. It's fascinating. You can find it on the web. It's very easy to find. And in that, they lay this thing out, this idea that there would be a citizens' militia that would protect the state, that it would be sponsored essentially by the state, and that every able-bodied person would be a member of the citizens' militia, and that in order to maintain this militia, now this is basically the Swiss Army form of government, and for a while the Israeli army was organized in similar fashion. And although it's changed in the last few decades, but the Swiss army still is this way, and that is that everybody, or at least I think in Switzerland it's every male, but in some other countries like in Israel it included women as well, as I recall, that every able-bodied man between the age of, say, 18 and 40 or something like that was a member of the militia. Sort of like our National Guard now, only it was not voluntary. You either did that or you had to do some sort of national service for a couple of years. And you know, once a year for a week or two, you'd go in for training and make sure that your skills were functional. And you kept a gun in your house so that if there was a national emergency, if the country was invaded, then everybody can just grab their gun and step out into the street and say, ta-da, here I am. Me complete with my gun, I am part of the militia. And this militia that was well defined there, now made its way into the United States Constitution. Jefferson and Mason, George Mason was actually the leading advocate for a Bill of Rights attached to the Constitution. And Madison in the beginning was saying, you know, we really don't need this because every state has its own Bill of Rights, the Virginia one being an example. And everybody realizes that the purpose of this Constitution is just to define the powers or the privileges of government and to constrain the powers of government rather than to grant rights to people, because we all know that people have all the rights. Government only has privileges. And Mason and Jefferson said, well, you know, future generations may not remember this. So Jefferson and many of the others argued very strongly that we should not have a standing army. And in fact, this was one of the things that, the guy that I was quoting in the last hour about trade, Henry Clay, was very outspoken about, was that we needed to disband, he suggested, actually, the United States Army. And to a large extent, it was. Between the election of Jefferson in 1800 and 1814, Jefferson left office in 1808, as I recall. But by between then and the War of 1812, the U.S. Army kind of disintegrated, or it was reduced. But the Navy was being built up because the whole idea was protect our borders. Anyhow, everybody was part of the militia. And therefore, everybody had to have a gun. Now, the gun rights folks will run around telling you that the reason that the Second Amendment to the Constitution, what this listener is suggesting I should be supporting, is in there, is because, they say, if the government ever becomes oppressive, we have an obligation to have another revolution and overthrow it, that kind of language. I mean, that's what they're suggesting. And therefore, we have to have guns to do that. And I don't buy it. If the founders had intended that, yeah, Jefferson did say, you know, the tree of liberty needs to be washed, watered by patriots' blood every now and then. He was speaking of the French Revolution. In fact, it was a letter to a Frenchman in which he said it. The Second Amendment was about defining the nature of our army. It had nothing, you know, if they had intended for, I mean, the state of the art in military weaponry in 1789 when the Constitution was ratified, or 1787, was the cannon. Or the ship at sea, what were they called? The warships at sea, there's a name for them. And if that's what they, you know, if they wanted us to, if they wanted individual citizens to have weaponry that could take on the federal government, then they wouldn't have said you have the right to bear arms. They would have said you have the right to have cannons. You have the right to have warships. Or in modern form, you should have the right to have nuclear weapons, or the right to have surface-to-air missiles, or the right to have, you know, and nobody is suggesting that. It's an irrational argument. Here's what the Second Amendment says, and keep in mind, this was the history of it. It was to have a Swiss-style army that these guys were all working towards. Second Amendment says, and I quote, in its entirety, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So when you get it, you get it. I mean, you know, it's just, so yeah, I'm all in favor of the Second Amendment in the context that Jefferson envisioned it. I really think we should have national service. And one of the folks on our message board here was posting, you know, Senate Bill 89, as I recall. I'd have to scroll up and do it. It's hard to do that while I'm talking at the same time. Can't scroll and talk at the same time. But there is legislation now before the United States Senate, and probably in the House as well. I know one of the candidates, it was Charlie Rangel, was suggesting this. To have national conscription, to reinstitute the draft. And for those people who don't want to go into the draft, you have some secondary form of service. You have the National Guard, like George Bush got into by having his father pull strings a month, just 6 weeks before he was about to be drafted. Or you have, like they do in Germany, where you can work in a hospital, you can work for a charitable organization, that kind of thing. Anyhow, Jim Turr says, I phoned this letter into national. He says, here's a letter that he wrote, and he phoned it into somebody who said they were going to give it to Terry McAuliffe, and I thought this was kind of cool, so I thought I'd read this to you. He says, with regard to the various strategies being addressed to bring a sane administration to the White House, yes, it would be helpful if progressives could eventually build up an opinion-making machine to rival that of the conservatives, but beyond that, what the Democrats need most is a candidate who's willing to clearly and repeatedly point out the obvious, that the Bush administration is a dangerous, single-minded, corporate-oriented cabal at odds with the interests of 95% of Americans, slickly and deceptively dragging us toward a bleak, bankrupt, fundamentalist future. There's nothing wrong with Democrat values and agenda, but they cannot even be heard until the spell of the conservative myth-making machine is broken and their good old boy figurehead exposed for what he is. Well said, Jim. Jim also runs a website, BlueCanyonProductions.com, as I recall. And excellent stuff, some great spoofs on there and things. We're going to have to play more of these on this program. Shoba in New Orleans, or Schmoltzy in the metro New Orleans area, says, Lieberman is really Republican and belongs body and soul to corporate America. I've been very liberal my entire life, but voted for Perot and Nader. The reason I voted for Perot was because of Clinton's pro-NAFTA stance. After Clinton's first 4 years, he dumped citizens off welfare without a safety net, and that made me decide to vote for Nader. I don't give a hoot about what Clinton did with his sex life, but when he started acting like a greedy, uncompassionate Republican, that put him out of my list. The DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, is hijacking the Democratic Party, just as the extreme right wing hijacked the Republican Party. I have also believed that the DLC is actually a Republican mole. How's that for a conspiracy theory? Well, that's something to think about. The Republicans decide to take over the Democratic Party, and they do it by creating the DLC. I have to admit, it never occurred to me, and I thought I was pretty good at coming up with conspiracies. And then Schmoltzy goes on to say, Dean represents life and vitality and could turn our stale, corporate-infested Democratic Party around. Tim in Hartford is against national service. Tim, 1-800-TALK. Yes, thanks for calling. We just got about a minute in this segment. I can hold you over the break if you want, or you can make your point real quickly. Welcome to the show.
Start off by saying, you know, I think that there's well-intentioned that many people who propose some of these things that, you know, for a year we're going to go out and do this and do that, plant some forest, that sort of thing. But the real issue is, number one, I'm against the idea that we should force anybody in our society to do anything against their will for the most part. That's just kind of against my nature. But a second thing, I think it also kind of undermines the fact that, you know, we need to pay professional people to manage the forest, manage our hospitals, do all that sort of stuff. We don't need a volunteer service of people that are, you know, who knows how much that they're really committed. We need to professionally pay people to do all these services that we're trying to get from people. And
yeah,
when we undermine that kind of thing by saying, oh, we'll just have some high school kids or whatever, I think it misses the point.
Yeah, I agree. If that was the whole point of national service was to revive the forests, I agree with you, Tim. But I'll mention this after we come back from the break. But, Tim, thanks for the call. I appreciate your comment, and it's well said, and it's a common objection that I think does deserve a thoughtful comment. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Hi, Tom Baudet from Motel 6. Some websites use outrageous gimmicks to attract visitors, like click here and get three wishes. But at Motel6.com, they have click six web bargains that save you even more off the lowest price of any national chain. And you can only get them when you book online. Sorry, no three wishes, but you will have more money. That's usually wish number one anyway. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light on for you. And a core hotel.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Use as directed.
Show.
Gizmo's back on the line in Tucson, Arizona.
First off, I'd like to tell you I'm on Sirius Radio 145 Left, and say hi to my other trucker buddies out there that listen to you, Kodiak and James. And
great.
I pulled this 18-wheel car over the side of the road to speak with you. I've read a couple articles that suggested that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have followed pretty much the same lines to go to war with Iraq. I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of conspiracy all the way back to the 2000 election to get Jr. in so he could go ahead and fulfill the plans designed for their father in his second term. I enjoy your program. You're very informative, and I've learned a lot from listening to you, and I appreciate your program, Tom, so keep it up.
Well, thank you, Gizmo. That's very kind of you, and thanks for pulling the 18-wheeler off to the side. I didn't realize you were driving a truck. That's remarkable.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. On the IE America Radio Network, wrapping up the last 2.5 minutes or so here of this hour. Thank you for hanging out with us for these 3 hours if you've been on all this time. Broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network on Sirius Satellite System, Channel 145, and on the web from radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. Here's my argument for this, and we can pick up a discussion of this tomorrow. We've had a couple of callers, Linda and Robert, and I asked both of them to call back tomorrow because I want to give you, the caller, enough time to actually make your point. I know we've only got about 2 minutes here. But I'll just leave this thought for you, and you can give us a call tomorrow when we start the show at noon, and we'll just get right into it. Every indigenous society that I've ever participated in, hung out with, or studied or worked with, and I have worked with Aboriginal people on four continents in the last 30 years, has significant puberty rites of passage, some kind of rite in which people pass from being a child to being an adult. And the only small remnants we have of that in our culture are the bar mitzvah or the high school graduation. So I think that a rite of passage is a critical thing. Louise and I lived in Germany for a year, 86, 87, and during that time we knew many young people who had to join the military or do national service. And what was remarkable to me was that the vast majority of the kids that I knew did national service. They volunteered in a whole realm of areas, and we were working with a nonprofit organization, a voluntary organization, doing relief work all around the world. And we had several of these people there. There are still people there, Kinder in Jugendhilfsfrücht-Salem in Steinach, Germany. And it was a marvelous transition for these kids. It got them out of their families. It exposed them to the parts of the world that they would never know. So, number one, I think that the rites of passage alone are useful and positive and powerful and important. Number two, I think that there is something to be said for making it clear to people that if you're going to benefit from living in a society that you have to pay back to that society somehow. And that's such a critical thing. It lays the foundation for the idea of paying taxes and companies being accountable and just all this kind of stuff, rather than just this enormous selfishness of, well, you know, I shouldn't have to give back anything. So I think it's a good idea, personally. Day 139 of the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 695 of the search for Osama bin Laden, a man whose name has not crossed the lips of George Bush in 3 months now. Our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Atlanta with help from Joe McPherson in Georgia, engineered by Steve Damschroeder in Detroit. Thanks for joining us today. Tune back in tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on. This is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom.